Welcome to Accelerate Your Business Growth,
where we're exploring all sorts of business topics. Experts from around the world join me, your host, Diane Helbig, for a conversation where they share their expertise with all of you. Take what you need when you need it. Featured on Inc.com, Forbes, and MSNBC's Your Business, this podcast is recognized as one of the best podcasts for small business, sales, leadership, social media, and more. When it comes to business, Accelerate Your Business Growth has got it covered. And now on with the show. My guest today is Martha Sullivan. Once a systems consultant, Martha turned a brilliant act of rebellion into a career as a CPA, CFO, COO, value growth strategist, and family business succession consultant, working with hundreds of clients over 3+ decades. A consultant with the Family Business Consulting Group and president of Providence Hill Consulting, she has one purpose: help business owners build, buy, and sell their company so they can move on to their next adventure and achieve their financial goals. Thanks so much for coming back on the podcast, Martha.
Thank you, Diane. I'm excited to be here again today. It's been a while since we talked, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
I am too. I love it when people want to come back. So
yeah.
Thank you. And today we're talking about family businesses, which, you know, is a whole thing in and of itself. Right?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk some about how you think family businesses are faring in today's business environment, and particularly as it relates to succession, if you would.
Absolutely. You know, in my work at the Family Business Consulting Group, we work with so many different family businesses and have seen, you know, the kind of ups and downs as everybody's been navigating them, and particularly the last couple of years. And I think in today's environment, and as it relates to succession, there is really heightened awareness around succession. I think many of the now generation that are in the true ownership equity holding positions are at a phase and stage of life where they're likely thinking, okay, it's time to pass the baton. I think the pandemic heightened that and even potentially accelerated that for some owners. So we're seeing heightened awareness around it. And what's been encouraging is that with that awareness, families, both the owning generation and the next generation, I think are acknowledging the sense that maybe they weren't quite as ready for this transition as maybe they could have been or should have been, because the pandemic burnt a lot of owners out. I'm seeing that across the board, whether it's family business or not family owned business. The baby boomers, who had a lot of energy still going into the pandemic, kind of lost the wind in their sails, and they don't have it in them to keep doing what they were doing. So with that more hurried need to get out, family businesses are turning more to folks like us and other resources for help in trying to figure out how do you do this? How do you navigate this? Because it is a different dynamic in a family business when you're talking about ownership transition than it is in a otherwise privately held organization. So a lot of activity going on, also a lot of interest in tapping into resources to help navigate uncharted waters for families.
Yeah, boy, it so resonates with me, all what you are saying about how the impact that the past couple of years has had. So hopefully in this space of, you know, family businesses, hopefully, I think it's heartening that they're reaching out for help, right? That they're saying, mm-hmm. okay, we don't know how to navigate this, but we need to, as opposed to suddenly being in a place where they're forced into it and haven't had that system right. put in place.
Right. Or they recognize that they are in that situation where there isn't a system in place and they're trying to navigate the dynamics that can be fairly dicey in an unprepared situation. So, you know, a lot of folks aren't even aware that there is this family consulting niche out there of resources. And it's heartening to see that people are learning that there are resources out there. So it's an important message for business owners and next generation members just to become aware of that whether it's Family Business Consulting Group or other resources, there are resources out there.
Exactly. Right, because there's so much they don't know about how to do it. Yeah. Let's talk about the generations. Are you seeing, I mean, there's always challenges. So what are the generational challenges that family-owned businesses are facing these days?
You know, back in the old days, you know, I think there was always, in decades before, there was just this assumption that the business would stay in the family and it would transition generation to generation. And in fact, there was a study that I think Pricewaterhouse does family business studies on a periodic basis. And they had done some that was tracking the preference of keeping it in the family versus keeping ownership, but maybe it being managed by non-family management teams or selling it outright. And a decade or two ago, the predominance was keep it in the family, period, end of story. And what they were able to track, and they stopped tracking this particular data point, which I find really disappointing, but over a decade period, they were tracking it. And they ultimately saw that flip, that more and more family businesses were now strongly considering just outright selling to third parties, as opposed to keeping the business in the family. And I think that trend is still continuing for a variety of reasons between the generations. One has to do with the next generation has other interests, and they are more than happy to exercise their right to explore those other interests. They don't want to take over mom and dad's business because they've watched mom and dad deal with it all those years, and they want a different life-work balance. So they're not willing to take that on. Conversely, there's always been the issue of whether the mom and dad generation have confidence in the kids to be able to do it, because usually those transactions are seller financed if they're not gifted. And will mom and dad see their money if junior is unable to maintain the profitability of the company in the long haul? So there are a lot of different forces at work that have business owners starting to think, well, maybe keeping it in the family isn't the best thing for the family. And that's part of our work, is talking about what is best for the family. And it may not be keeping the business. It might be better off to sell it and redeploy those assets into the next generation's other entrepreneurial interests or whatever. So I like exploring all the options, but we are seeing those shifts in terms of keeping it versus selling it.
It feels to me like there's so much emotion attached to these decisions, mm-hmm. right? That
absolutely.
That can be a real minefield for a family. I mean, just to, you know, maintain the family dynamic and relationships. So since it's, you know, pretty emotionally charged, are there certain models that you favor in supporting family businesses as they go through this challenge? Because, you know, you just mentioned that, you know, really sitting down and evaluating is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What's your sense there?
You know, I really believe in a model that looks at the family enterprise and breaks it into three distinct systems to start with. There's the family system, there's the ownership system, and then there's the management of the company system. And each one of them is chock full of their own dynamics and rules, and how do we treat one another, and what is our goal, and what is our purpose, and what are our values, and all that sort of mix. But how they're usually looked at is one big ball of yarn, all wrapped up into one. Mm-hmm. And with this three system model, you're able to at least pull them apart for a period of time and say, well, wait a second, let's talk about what it means to be a family first. What are the family values? What are our codes of conduct as a family? What are our priorities? What is our mission? What is our vision as a family? And that seems kind of lofty, but when there are assets such as business involved, they're very, very important conversations, because that will ultimately lead to other conversations in the ownership system. Who gets to be an owner? Who doesn't get to be an owner? What do we expect of our owners? Do you have to be employed by the company to be an owner or not? How do those systems work, and how do the values and vision of the family transfer into the ownership? And then ultimately, how does that transfer into how the business is managed and its values, its goals, and so on? So they're integrated, but by pulling them apart and setting up these forms of governance in each one of the systems, it sets the stage to navigate the really yucky situations where it does get emotional. And, you know, maybe I'm in business with a sibling and we're talking about a particular business challenge, and we're both employed by the business and we're both owners. And my sister's pushing my button and I'm getting all fluffy. Well, am I getting fluffy because it's my sister pushing my button and she knows how to push my button? Or is it because I truly find and take issue with the business proposition that she is proposing? And which hat am I wearing? And the more training that we have as a family in skill development that we have in terms of me saying, no, Marth, you're just getting all fluffy because she's pushing your button and she knows what she's talking about. And because that's pushing your button, you're reacting the way you are, as opposed to whatever the dynamic be. When you take those three systems and you kind of put them together like a Venn diagram where they overlap, it really does help you see, well, here's a person that's a member of the family. They're not an owner, but they're involved in the business. And how does it impact how they view the world and what role they should have in the overall enterprise? So it can be a very complicated model, but if you just start thinking about the fact that there's just these three systems and pull them apart for a while, and think about the different roles and different rules in each of them, I think it starts setting a framework to build other supporting systems around them.
I really like that idea, but as you were talking, I kept thinking about family businesses that I've known over the years where the ownership wasn't necessarily inclined to have like collaborative conversations on that level. So, you know, like pulling in the rest of the family and saying, okay, once you've broken things up, but still to be able to say, something other than, you know, it's my business and while I'm running it, we're going to do things this way.
Yeah. My way, highway.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it really, it can be a real challenge to, especially as you go from first generation entrepreneur to second generation. I think that's very, very true in terms of, you know, it traditionally is the matriarch, my way, highway. It's my business, bust off, kiddo. It is going to be what it's going to be. But then there are those families that recognize, no, it is a little bit different. And I think it's interesting. There was years ago, I was meeting with a family owner, and he was a my way highway kind of guy. And he was resisting thinking about this and doing anything along the plans of succession planning. And we tried approaching him on it a couple of different times, but then what really was the trigger was when we started talking about it with he and his wife, and they were saying, well, we're hoping Jimmy will come back and take over the business. It's like, well, what if Jimmy doesn't want to? Well, I guess we figure out something else. Well, what are you doing to make it attractive for Jimmy to want to? You know, you just expect him to, this was a business that was in a rural area of the country, and Jimmy was living the high life in one of the bigger cities. And so it's like, there needs to be a compelling reason. And if you're inviting Jimmy back to a dumpster fire where it's going to be my way, highway, Jimmy may not want to come. Mm. And that really resonated with him in terms of, oh, okay. If legacy truly is important to me and providing a good opportunity for my kiddo is important to me, then I think you start to see the white knuckles kind of release a little bit and a willingness to talk about it. But you're absolutely right. It's tough territory. And a lot of times you need frameworks to help you have those conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Because they're not really thinking it through. They're thinking they'll just keep running it and then their kid will come home and jump right back into it. And it's challenging when that doesn't happen because they really haven't set it up.
Right. For that to happen. And, you know, the tragedy in that scenario is Jimmy wants to do right by the parents. So dollars to donuts, if an unforeseen circumstance happens to dad, Jimmy comes back because that's what a good son does.
Right.
And puts himself into a situation that he doesn't have a real learning curve. Yeah, he worked in the business when he was in high school and college, but that doesn't mean squat in terms of preparation for running the company. And, you know, it takes time to do these intergenerational transitions, not just in ownership, but really the transformation and transfer of knowledge and capabilities and skills. It's fascinating. And I just find this fascinating.
Yeah. Fascinating and challenging. Like, good for you for taking it up.
Well, yeah, why not?
I know someone has to, right?
That's right. That's
exactly
right.
And you enjoy it and you're good at it. So
I do.
What sort of resources do you think are out there really to support not just the family, but also the management team as they're really growing the business? You know, so let's go to that place where they're growing it. They're planning for succession. What should they be, you know, checking into?
So ideally, now this is Shangri-La, ideally there is a strong relationship between those three systems, between the family, the ownership, and management, so that if it is a management team that is made up of non-family members, there's a communication path as to what the heck is, you know, my marching orders as the non-family CEO or president, what are my marching orders? That needs to be really clear. And if it's not clear, The CEO may want, or president may want, to try and enable some of those conversations. Having a strategic plan that is not only aligned with what's going on in the industry and what the management team sees as the vision for the company, but connecting that to the family's goals and making sure that those are consistent. And then the other purposes for succession planning is really, it applies to any company, and making sure that there is a strong management team, that the value drivers and factors in the business are strong, so that in theory, the business can thrive under any ownership. So that's really, in my mind, the marching orders for a management team is that, yes, ownership matters, but in terms of a profitable, thriving organization, are you able to continue the business, whether, you know, mom and dad own it, or it's second generation, or it's third generation? As you go through the different generations, that communication link and the systems for governance become more and more and more important. And resources that are out there, I know we often hold events. There's, other organizations out there, Family Firm Institute, Family Business. Am I installing the name of, but there are other organizations out there that are dedicated to supporting family businesses. In some communities, there are family business centers. We have one here in the Madison, Wisconsin area that's affiliated with the University of Wisconsin. And I think Loyola has one, and Northwestern has one, and Kellogg. There are other family business centers that family businesses, as well as non-family executives, can turn to learn more about these dynamics and build skill sets that'll help them navigate some of the management and governance conversations and the fun stuff.
Excellent. Thank you. And it's amazing how many resources actually are out there. A lot of them are, location specific. I know here in Cleveland, there are a couple of organizations that deal specifically, with family businesses.
How much do you understand the future of finance? I'm Jim Roos, a top 10 banking influencer and host of the podcast Banking Transformed, where we dive deeply into the rapidly evolving world of banking and financial technology. Join me as I interview industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators as they unravel the latest banking trends, disruptions, and game-changing technologies reshaping the world of finance. Redefine your understanding of the banking ecosystem. Subscribe now to Banking Transformed, available wherever you get your podcast, and now available on YouTube.
Hey friends, this is Jim Knight, former 21-year Hard Rock executive turned best-selling author and top 10 keynote speaker.
And I'm Brant Menswar, former frontman of Hollywood's most dangerous band turned top 10 motivational speaker and best-selling author.
We host the how-to podcast Thoughts That Rock, where we talk to rock stars, athletes, CEOs, astronauts, and even next-door neighbors who share their expertise and opinions. Together, we tackle the most interesting and challenging topics of today.
Whether you want to learn how to become more confident, how to deal with anxiety at work,
or how to write a hit song, or use Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in life,
we've got hundreds of episodes to help amp up your life and move you forward.
Subscribe to Thoughts That Rock wherever you listen to podcasts, and check out evergreenpodcast.com for more information.
Let's talk some about retirement.
Yes, let's. You're not talking about mine. Exactly. Okay, never mind.
I know. Not mine, but that's a big part of, from what I hear from people, that one of the biggest parts of owners being able to plan for leaving the business, turning it over to either the next generation or, somebody totally outside the business, is what are they going to do after? Mm-hmm. So, you know, how should this current owning generation be approaching this subject?
Oh, that is the magic question. I think whether you're in a family business or you're just the average bear looking at retirement. But to your point, one of my colleagues in Family Business Consulting Group, Stephanie Brune-Ponte, she actually wrote an entire book around preparing for this next phase in terms of how do you prepare it. It's called Transitioning from the Top, but the Reader's Digest version of Transitioning from the Top is really encouraging the business owner, or I think really any of us that are facing retirement, to start thinking about what we want, what would be of interest, what really, you know, what are the passions we haven't had time to pursue, or what are the passions that we have within the business that we'd like to stay connected to, and start thinking about that at least a year or two ahead of time. And, you know, so maybe, you know, for example, Alzheimer's affects my family. And so I've gotten involved. I got involved in that board and activities related to that well before my retirement age. So I would have a network built up. So if I wanted to continue in that vein, or there are other interests that I have, I've built the network to allow me to glide into it as opposed to cold turkey. And really looking at the, setting myself up and thinking about the possibilities that I have facing me, as opposed to not thinking about it, kicking that can down the road. And all of a sudden I put down the champagne glass and I'm like, oh, what the heck am I going to do now? And that leaves people looking in the rearview mirror. And that's just a tiny little glass compared to the windshield. And so a lot of the conversation that Stephanie has, she actually interviewed a handful of brand name owner CEOs, and what were the steps they went through to set the stage so that they could slide into it without a whole lot of bumps and bruises around along the way. I think for family ownership, there really is a great opportunity for the owning generation to move into other roles, even though they may not be owners anymore. There's so much advice and wisdom that they can provide within the construct of the family and the next generation, that just because you're not an owner doesn't mean you cannot be involved in the family enterprise in some form or fashion. And that doesn't mean that you're even employed by the business. It just means you're contributing to what it means to be a member of the broader family. So there are opportunities out there. And I also think it comes down to a lot of attitude. Yeah. You know, are you going to be one of those people that looks in the rearview mirror, or are you going to get up every day and see that there's plenty of things to do out there if you have the gumption to go do it?
Well, that is for sure. And boy, you touched on something that I'm really curious about. Do you find that it is ever difficult for an owner, after they turn over ownership, to be able to participate in a more hands-off sort of way, where they're still contributing, but they're not decision-making, let's say?
It becomes deeply personal. And, you know, it's the old adage, it depends. It depends on the person. And there are many owners or prior owners that do continue in roles that are contributing to the business. If you think about it in the context of the family business, and maybe they did sell it to a third party, so now they have this windfall of wealth, many families elect to set up a family office, and they become their own little private equity firm, if you will, without the constraints of, you know, selling the business in X years. they may go invest in other businesses. And so that might be something that they can contribute to and be a part of. Or if the business does stay in the family, I think, you know, I think it's okay that they're not a decision maker if they work on letting go. And they take steps to develop the relationship and the communication with the next generation so that it's a win-win, that, you know, they're kept informed. They may still be consulted on certain things, so that they are able to stay connected in a way that's fruitful for both parties. Now, sometimes that's easier said than done. But that again comes back to that it depends on the person and the family and the situation. And sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes it's just best if they take their marbles and go do something else.
Right. So a lot, yeah, it does depend. I get that. A lot of it has to do with personality type and
yeah, and dynamics and history and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Is there a particular point at which you think the ownership generation should bring the next generation into the conversation about transition and succession?
I can't point to a specific point, you know, by X, you should be doing this. I think, again, it's very situational. But a lot of times we will encourage family involvement at a very young age. I mean, we with our clients will help them build and hold family retreats where they're talking about, you know, those three systems that we talked about earlier, and introducing even at a young age the fact that, yeah, we have this family business, and this is what allows mom and dad to go do the work that we do, and grandpa and grandma do what they do. And it does a number of things. It helps them understand business at a level that is geared towards what their age bracket is. It helps them start to understand matters around money and wealth and responsibility around money and wealth and work. And so if you facilitate these events and you keep it fun, I mean, I've been in family retreats where there were 5-year-olds in the room and 11-year-olds and 13-year-olds and 21-year-olds. And we were able to start the conversation and get them thinking about what it means to be in a family business. I think all told, we had all three generations represented in the room at the same time, and they got to learn from one another and hear from one another about what aspirations each other had. And it normalizes it, and it sets the stage so that eventually when that 21-year-old gets done with grad school and talks to grandpa about what opportunities there might be in the business, they're not going in there cold, and they potentially understand that, yeah, to work in the family business, I need to have this level of education and I need to have this level of work experience someplace else before I'll even be welcomed, because that's what our family believes.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Do you think it's important for, you know, next generations to work in other companies before they work in the family or before they get involved in possible transition to ownership?
That is definitely my bias. I've seen it work successfully in either direction, but that is my bias, that next gens do go work someplace else for at least 3 years and get the sense of a different business environment experience, as opposed to stepping into the echo chamber. If they've only worked for the family business, it it doesn't give them a broad enough experience base to grow and develop. They also, if you go directly into the family business, you don't have the same credibility as somebody who's gone and at least had some experience someplace else. You're just the owner's kid. And that builds a different set of challenges into it than if you had gone and worked someplace else and weren't, you know, just the kid that fell off the carriage and into the business. So I do, that is my bias, that they go work for another company or two before they come into the family business. But every family has their own biases and perspectives on whether they are a family first family business or a business first family business. And that's a continuum. You know, the family first family business would be, you know, Martha, you have the right last name, so you are welcome. And if we don't have a job for you, we will find one for you and you will be paid well. And it's the family is the priority. And serving the family is the priority, as opposed to a business first business. I think of the royal family as the extreme business first family business, because everything is about the business and the impression and, you know, what's done right by our rules for the business of being the royal family. So you can see that played out in their relationships, that the royal life trumps the needs, the personal needs. So it is a continuum. I don't know. I derailed. I'm sorry. I went off.
Oh, no, that's okay. And that is a great example. I love that. Now you mentioned, you know, becoming a family office. Will you explain a little bit more about really what that is and how that works?
Sure. So a family office is, so let me back up and compare it to a private equity firm. Okay. So the basic framework of a private equity firm is you and I get a bunch of our qualified friends to give us this pot of gold. And we set up a basic criteria of what type of companies we want to invest in or buy with this pot of gold. And so we might go buy one company, let's say it's a cookie company. They make cookies. And we're going to make that our portfolio, our platform company. And that's our main company. And then we might buy other food companies that support the cookie company. And we build out this portfolio of companies that we purchased or invested in with our pot of gold. Same thing is basically what a family office is doing. They have a portion of their wealth that they are dedicating to investing in other companies. And they might own 100% of them. They might own a majority position, in which would be over 51%, so that they have control of it. Or it might be a smaller piece that they have ownership in, but it's an investment portfolio that they're managing. And they might be managing it so far as to be really deeply involved in the portfolio company's management, or they may just be a quiet investor and they're on the board and that's it. But that's essentially, they're like the same thing. The big difference between the two is when you and I set up our private equity company in our fund, and we talked to all of our qualified investor friends, we made a promise to them that at a certain point in time, by a certain date, by contract, we would deliver certain return back to them. It might be return of the money they gave us. It might be a number of different things and how they're structured. But that essentially forces us to buy the cookie company and then sell it, get our money out of it within a certain time frame. Usually 5 to 7 years is kind of the rule of thumb that you hear. Well, in a family office, you can take a buy and hold strategy. You don't have to sell it by contract to meet the happiness of our investor friends. It's the family's family office. It's the family's portfolio. And they're not time constrained in terms of how long they hold on to it or they don't hold on to it. So does that make sense?
It does. And I so appreciate that explanation because I have heard it and I have not understood at all what it meant. So
yeah. And so what it means to a family that wants to get into this is there's a whole other set of governance rules and values and expectations that they have to come to in terms of, well, what does this mean for the family office? What are our family values and how are we going to live those out within this portfolio of companies? How does that translate into which companies we'll consider and which ones we won't and why? And, you know, it just, there's kind of a domino effect in terms of the governance issues that come up and need to be talked through kind of upfront. Or if you haven't talked through them upfront, you know, come to a consensus so that you're all on the same page managing it.
That's so interesting.
Isn't it? It really is fascinating.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And so if there's a member of the family business who really wants to, you know, keep I guess, their finger on the pulse of the company, on themselves in relationship to the company and their path, are there things that they can do to, you know, things that you would suggest so that they could be starting that process or making sure that they're keeping those tabs?
Well, yes. Yeah. I think first, if as a member of a family business, I think it starts with you. In terms of understanding what you, the family member, want, need, expect to some degree. Different family members have different needs, different expectations. There are families where there's like not a snowball's chance anywhere that I'm going to work with my sibling, and self-awareness around that is important. So that those types of things really do start with the individual and understanding what your boundaries are, what you want out of it, how you align with the values and whatnot. If based on that, you want a role in the family enterprise and the family, that's where you can actually pull out that Venn diagram and think about, well, where are the opportunities? You know, I don't want to be an employee, but can I help develop the next generation? Maybe my background is in training and development, and I want to focus on the next generation of the family. And maybe some of my nieces and nephews will go into the family business, and maybe I'll just be helping them develop into future entrepreneurs, and that's okay. So it really, you know, starts with the person, and then you go to those systems and understand what's going on in those systems. Are there paths for communication? Do we have a governance framework? Do we have a family council? How are decisions made? And then you start, you know, peeling back that onion, starting to take steps to, you meet where you're at and try to develop your plan from there. It's there is no cookie cutter route, because every family business starts from a different position. But I personally think it starts with the individual, and then you need to think about the family and kind of go in that sequence, family ownership management.
Really like that a lot. Thank you so much for that. I love that. I think people have to be tremendously honest with themselves, which actually leads me to another question. If there's a family member who isn't really in the business, has helped out periodically, mm-hmm. but really, you know, is not in the business, and identifies that they really don't want to go into ownership of the business, but they're getting a lot of energy from the generation before them, that that's the goal and that's the desire. How do you have any suggestions on how they can go about sharing that and making that clear, that that's not the direction that they see themselves heading?
I think a lot of it comes down to having open communication. But then again, I certainly understand and appreciate the fact that, you know, the next generation person is trying to navigate the relationship with their parents and parents' expectations and things of that nature. You know, it is possible to be a member of the family and a member of the business and not an owner. And, you know, exploring and understanding why you don't want to be an owner, there's a lot of risk in being an owner. So it may be a matter of saying, Mom and Dad, I don't want that risk. I'm not wired that way. It's just not me. And I love you and I love the business, but it's just not me. Maybe we need to explore other ways that we can remain involved as a family, but not necessarily be the owners. And one way, you know, I'm seeing more and more family businesses explore the option of ESOP as you know, an employee stock ownership plan, as a potential exit opportunity and path, as opposed to a third party exit, because it keeps, you know, there's a stronger probability of the business stays in the community and it empowers the employees. Now, it's not for everybody. There are a lot of reasons why an ESOP potentially wouldn't apply to a family business situation. But I think the critical thing is going to the now generation and saying, let's explore all of our options and talk through it as a family. Whether it's the next generation initiates that conversation, or it's the now generation, the owning generation, saying, hey kids, we're going to explore all of our options together and talk through what they mean and what are our options. You know, we have too much debt. ESOP isn't a option for us. Well, what about private equity? Private equity sounds scary, but it's actually can be a great opportunity for taking the business to the next level. They're not all Gordon Gekko, like everybody likes to make them out to be. Or maybe it is a strategic. There are lots of different options. And the important thing is, let's explore them. Let's not make any assumptions that we have to keep it in the family or we have to sell it. Let's understand it and make the decision. Now, ultimately, that decision is going to be made by the owning members, because they get the vote. But by having at least a voice, yeah, it's important to have a voice, even if you don't have a vote. Right. And I'll frame it in this way, Diane, very quickly, a story on this. There's a client that I've known for years, and the patriarch came from a family business himself, and he was working in his father's family business. And his father decided, he talked to his sons and what they wanted to do with the business. And my client wanted to keep the business, but the father ultimately decided, nope, we're not keeping the business. And he, from my client's perspective, had his company sold out from under him. He went on to form his own business with his own next generation involved as owners and participants in the business. Not all of them were active employees of the business, but they were all owners. And now that patriarch is essentially holding the next generation hostage. He will never sell the business because he doesn't want to do what his dad did to him. But yet the next generation is now in their late 50s and 60s, and their third generation has no real interest because of the family dynamics of getting involved in it. Well, you have to talk through this. You have to look through the alternatives. And if you start with what's best for the family, the alternatives will kind of play out and you can make better decisions.
Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing that example. It's a challenging situation for any family. And it's part of the reason I believe to be able to bring in outside voices that can see it from an unemotional standpoint, that can mm-hmm. carry on those conversations and help people really have discussions and go through a process is so important to not just the future of the business, but the future of the family dynamic.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why we, you know, at the Family Business Consulting Group, we start with that three system model and frame it in those terms.
Yeah, no kidding. So important.
It is.
Boy, Martha, thank you so much for coming back on and having this conversation with me. It's always timely, but especially now after the past couple of years, I so appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Diane, it's always a treat to talk with you. We've had good conversations in the past, and I look forward to many more in the future. This is always a wonderful time.
In the meantime, will you tell the listeners, you know, how they can find you and whatever they should know?
Cool. Absolutely. So you can find me at the Family Business Consulting Group. It would be the best place on this topic. And our website is www.thefbcg.com. And I'll also, if you go to our events page, we've got a number of really cool events coming up talking about how to get started in family governance, there's a webinar coming up on family harmony. So depending on when, this airs, we have lots of resources there, lots of articles and other things as well as the events. So check it out. And you can also check me out on LinkedIn. I'm there as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
And thank you.
Oh, absolutely. And listeners, thank you. You are who we are doing this for. And, you know, this is why I bring you people like Martha, who can really provide you with information that you are most likely wondering about, especially if you are in a family business or running a family business. So thank you all. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, a production of Evergreen Podcasts. Discover more episodes of this podcast and explore others at evergreenpodcast.com. As always, continue to prosper and be curious. And if you're looking to get your sales strategy headed in the right direction, pick up a copy of Succeed Without Selling on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Until we meet again on another episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, goodbye and good day.
The world's best-known investor and Wall Street expert, Warren Buffett, once said, "Wall Street is the only place that people ride to in a Rolls-Royce to get advice from those who take the subway." Mr. Buffett's quote is remarkably accurate, but how many people would rather receive advice from him than someone simply guessing? Welcome to Buy, Hold, Sell, your single source for Wall Street knowledge and profitable guidance. Please join me, Todd Schoenberger, and fellow trader Tobin Smith, as well as host Veronica Dudo, for a podcast known to move the needle for investors. Tobin and I are seasoned Wall Street executives with deep investment experience, and we are prepared to share our advice to those who choose to listen. Download Buy, Hold, Sell today on the Evergreen Podcast Network or your favorite podcast channel.